Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, heute ein Interview mit dir teilen zu können, das eins der Interviews war, was mich so tief berührt hat wie bisher kein anderes und was ja mich ganz tief bewegt zurückgelassen hat. Und zwar ist es ein Interview mit der wundervollen Yusra Madini. Vielleicht hast du ihren Namen schon mal gehört. Yusra Madini ist 2015 aus Syrien geflohen und hat dann bei der Bootsüberfahrt von der Türkei nach Griechenland dabei geholfen, zusammen mit ihrer Schwester das Boot quasi nach Griechenland zu ziehen, 3,5 Stunden lang durch das Meer zu ziehen, beziehungsweise auszugleichen, dass das Boot nicht umkippt oder in die falsche Richtung gezogen wird. Und sie erzählt in dem Interview ihre Geschichte, ihre gesamte Geschichte, wie sie aus Syrien bis nach Deutschland geflohen ist, einen Monat lang auf dieser Reise war, was sie alles erlebt hat und ja, wie es ihr dabei ergangen ist. Und sie erzählt, was danach passiert ist, wie es dazu gekommen ist, dass sie im olympischen Team der Flüchtlinge in Rio mitgeschwommen ist, was das für sie bedeutet hat. Und jetzt gerade trainiert sie wieder für die Olympischen Spiele 2020. Und dieses Interview ist wirklich ein Interview, das einen ja, bis ganz, ganz tief ins Herz einfach berührt. Und ich bin unglaublich dankbar dafür, dass sie diese Geschichte mit uns teilt. Und ich würde mich wahnsinnig freuen, wenn du nach dem Interview bei Instagram vorbeischaust, bei mir, bei Yusra, und uns deine Gedanken hinterlässt, was du darüber denkst. Und ich würde mich natürlich auch riesig darüber freuen, wenn dich dieses Interview auch dazu inspiriert, dein Herz zu öffnen und ja, dazu beizutragen, dass wir ein offenes Land sind für Menschen, die unsere Hilfe brauchen und dafür einstehen, anderen Menschen zu helfen, die auf der Flucht sind. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude bei diesem Interview. So happy and delighted to have the one and only wonderful Yusra Madini in the podcast today. Thank you so much for taking your time and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So let's dive right into the interview. And for everyone not knowing you, can you take us back maybe, let's say 10 years? Where have you been 10 years ago? Who were you? Where were you?
So 10 years ago, I was a swimmer still, and I was just a normal kid. I was in school. My father was my swimming coach. My mom was a physical therapist. And me and my older sister were also swimmers. And actually, basically, my life was swimming and school.
Okay. And where did you live? Where was your home 10 years ago?
I lived in Damascus in Syria. It's the capital. And it's really such a historical city full of really rich history. So I kind of didn't realize that till I left it, which is sad. But yeah, it's such a beautiful city.
Yeah. So now you are in Hamburg, right? Right now you're in the Olympic camp, or you're training for the Olympics.
Yeah, and it's called in German Olympiastützpunkt.
The Olympiastützpunkt, yes.
Yes.
It's a very German word.
Yeah.
And take us back. How did it happen that you're now in Hamburg? How old are you right now?
I'm 21.
You're 21. So what did happen that now with 21 you're living in Hamburg, training in the Olympiastützpunkt in Germany for the Olympics? What happened in between?
So 3 years ago, I competed at Rio Olympics. But before the big story, there's a lot that has happened. And when I was 17, I left my country because the war started when I was, you can say, 12. And kind of half, like 5 years of my life or 4 years of my life, I spent in a war. And me and my sister decided to leave because like this summer and the summer before, a lot of Syrian people were leaving the country because either they couldn't take the... You know, we didn't have electricity or water for 16 hours sometimes a day or more. And the electricity was cut off every day. This is one thing. The second thing, like, sometimes my parents or even us, we had to work. I had to work as a lifeguard in the summer and take care of my little sister. My older sister had to work. She worked in a like Zara or something like that, and yeah, clothing shop. My mom was a physical therapist, and my dad was a swimming coach, and we barely could, you know, afford a normal life. So we thought, and obviously the most basic reason, which is the war, and is like that your life is always in danger. So then we decided that we're gonna try to leave. And then we left without my mom. My dad was back then in Jordan because he was a coach there, because he had better opportunity. And yeah, then we left 2015.
Just one question there.
Yeah.
Take us to the night before you left. Like, you made the decision with your sister, you're going to leave. Did you know where you're going to go? How was the conversation with your mother? What were your feelings in the last night? Take us there for a moment.
So when we knew we were leaving, like, it was really like everything was really in a short term. Like, it was like in 1 week, everything, yeah, happened. And yeah, everything happened. And my dad said yes. We were surprised that my parents said yes. Like, my mom was crying to the last minute we were standing there, and she was against it the whole time. She wanted to come with us, with my little sister, but we said no. We said it's too dangerous for you. Like, you have a child with you, and we don't want that you or my little sister go through something like that. Like, we wanted to bring them afterwards. But then, like, the nights before, I remember, like, I didn't cry, to be honest. I didn't cry the whole, I don't know. I think I was, like, just trying to ignore my emotions. And so the last night, we went back home at 12 because we were saying goodbye to a lot of friends. And my friends brought this huge cake. They brought a huge picture full of, like, mini pictures, like a puzzle.
Yeah.
And even this, I couldn't take it with me. It's still in Syria. And yeah, they gave me souvenirs that I keep them with me. After that, yeah, I wasn't, like, in love, but I had a crush on someone, and he, like, in the end came, like, and, like, brought me home and said goodbye. And then I went up home, and then my mom was packing our stuff, and she was crying, and she was upset that we didn't spend time with her, kind of, because we were saying bye to my friends. And then we spent time with her, like, in the end, and then the next day we went all, like, with the car to my cousin. And then after that, yeah, we went all of us in a taxi to the airport. And then in the airport, my mom, my little sister, and then my grandpa was also there. And they were all crying because, like, I think it was really hard for her to know, you know, imagine if something happened on the way. For us, I think for us it was easier because, like, we are the one traveling. We are the one, if we disappeared, we know we are alive or we know we are well. But sometimes we disappeared for 4 hours. And this was for her, like, my daughters are gone, or even something they told me, my parents told me that also, I think we're gonna come to this point, the boat trip, my parents told me that after 2 hours we thought you're dead, and then my dad started praying already. Imagine, like, where the brain is taking you then. Yes, if the people
yes,
are not
so yes yes
yeah yeah.
And then that there was this night. So you were, or the next morning, you were at the airport. What were your feelings? What were you thinking? Did you know where you would go? Like, did you know the route? Or
yeah. So the thing is that every country you reach, you have to find a way. There is nothing like a concrete plan. There was this really really famous page on Facebook. And it got famous on the news that the refugees are contacting each other. The refugees are telling if the boats are drowning or not. And they closed it. And this got really famous in the news. So this is where we knew how to go or how to move. If we were lost, if you're lost, you just type on Facebook on the group I am here, blah, blah, blah. And then they tell you there was like people to help you and to tell you, do that, don't do that.
Okay,
I was
amazing.
that way. Yes. And they were
Amazing.
all Syrian, all refugees. Yes. And yeah, this is one thing. The other thing, we had like our phones. So every country we traveled to, we tried always to have a SIM card from the country. So we have internet. We had also a program that's called Baby Tracker. Mm-hmm. And then my parents and my cousin's parents would see where we are. If they would see that, as example, we are standing in the sea and nothing happened, they would call the police directly.
Okay.
So this is what all refugees did, kind of. And yeah, they saw where we are, or the last point where we had internet, kind of. And but no, we didn't know anything about the trip. We just knew that there's the boat trip. We knew that Hungary would be maybe terrible, like because what refugees told us. And yeah, we just knew that it's something we don't know. We didn't know if anything terrible would happen. We didn't know if we're gonna survive that, but you know, we just had to try.
I mean, this is for me listening, it's really, really hard to imagine how you must have felt. I mean, this is something where I think this is such a privilege if you live in Europe that you cannot even imagine in yeah. which place you have to be, that you have to make that decision to go somewhere where you don't know if you will survive it, but it will yeah. it's still better than where you are. And yeah, and I think this is just so important, especially in the current debate of refugees and coming to Europe. And for me, it's just so important to emphasize this, that it's you needed help that moment, right?
Yeah.
And it's so important to yeah, for everyone also just listening to
yeah
to help.
Yeah, and, so the, yes, the thing yeah. is that sorry to interrupt, but the thing
no,
is
please.
Like that I think, to be honest, like the people, 50% or 70% of the people here in Europe, they think about it and they feel the need to help.
Yeah,
they don't move.
Yes.
They're afraid if they didn't move or something, they would regret it, or like they are like, I don't know, this refugee will be, is not good for me, or
yeah.
you know what I mean? So I kind of understand why they're afraid, but I think in the end we are just humans, and
yes.
the reason, the basic reason why we left is because we really, I was afraid of just like, I didn't want to just live there, you know, just like just doing school, doing swimmer. Okay. And then what is the point of my life there? What is the point of living every day, imagining like someone of your family is going to die, or your friend is going to die. And I had that. A lot of my friends died. Like here, once they told me here in Berlin that someone of my friends died, I couldn't do anything. I was 1 week in my room. I didn't want to talk to anyone. It was really hard. So imagine having this thing like, okay, they tell you in one day, oh, the police took your friend. Oh, I don't know, your cousin was arrested. This the human died. Oh, there was today a bomb attack. This was my daily life. And it's till now happening. This is sad that it's still going on. It's not over.
Yes.
Since like now, it's almost 10 years now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's go back to this point later, how we can actually help and what we could do. But I would like to go through your story, because I think it's
yeah.
very inspiring and such a strong story. This is so.
Thank
today
you.
You're at the airport. What was the first country you were flying to?
I was flying to Beirut.
Mm-hmm.
In Lebanon, and it was terrible because like it was the beginning of like a really messy hell trip. They on the plane, the people were not the people, the person who gives you food and what is the name?
Yeah, the waitress, or the, I don't know how you call it.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
the stewardess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she came and she put on speaker and she was like, please, Syrian people, do not steal the swimming vest. This is the first thing she said. She said, do not steal the vest from under your seat. And I was like, if you paid for the flight, actually, it's your right to take the vest or not. You know, it's your decision. And this was humiliating. And then in the airport, the Syrian refugees had to sit on the floor. And they were not allowed to go out of some areas in the airport. And we had to sit on the floor even to wait for our next flight to Istanbul. This was one of the moments where I felt I was really humiliated, and I didn't appreciate that, because it's like the closest country to Syria, and they know exactly what's happening because there was war and there is still some wars in their countries, and they treated us like that. We opened our door for them, but they're treating us like that. So I felt really bad, and then after that, we took our next flight to Istanbul. And then in Istanbul, obviously, there is now more than 3 million Syrian people there. And it's an amazing country. After that, we stayed 1 week in Istanbul to decide if we want to go with a boat, if we want to go like with a bus to cross the borders. And the bus and so on, it didn't work for any refugees. It was only the sea. And the friend of...
When you say it didn't work, you mean that they couldn't cross the borders?
Yes. Okay. One of the people who were with us, he was the husband of one of my cousins. And he had fear of the sea. So he took the landway, and then they caught him and they brought him back. Okay. So so we went by sea, all of us. And so you had like to stay in Istanbul to see, to find smugglers, to to see what way is better, what smuggler is better than the other. They were all the same. You have to buy your swimming, like your vests. You have to buy a knife. Every refugee had a knife. And you also, I think, had to buy like a small light if something happened. And the medical stuff. And what we had, like, they tell you, you're not allowed to take any of your stuff. So, like, they say you're allowed to take, like, this bag. That's it from everything you have. So I took 3 T-shirts, maybe, and 2 pants. And in the end, when I got to the boat, I had to throw them. Because the boat is too full, you cannot take anything.
So you had nothing with you?
Nothing. I had my jeans, I had my T-shirt, I had like, you know, the selfie bag underwater for the underwater pictures. I put my phone, I put 500 euros, and I closed it, and I put it on my neck and then in my bra. That's everything I had. Even the shoes, I brought Timberland, so it's good for the way and blah, blah. And then I had to throw it because, like, we were trying to get to the boat the first time, and then it didn't work out. So I was running back to the shore, and then I got stuck between rocks, and that because of the Timberland. And then I had to throw it. Yeah. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to wear it. And then I wore flip flop, and then my flip flop got lost. So I even reached to Greece only with T-shirt and jeans. I didn't even have shoes. Yeah. Yeah.
I can picture it in my mind, but it really moves me. I think, yeah. Okay, so you reached the boat. You had to leave everything behind. Your sister was with you. You have like this little bag with 500 euros and your phone, nothing else with you. Yeah. How many people were on the boat?
20.
20. And was it day or was it night when you entered the boat?
It was at 7 p.m., 7:30 p.m. Yeah, okay. So it was, the sun was almost going away, like it was almost sunset. When we got in the boat, so usually this boat is, you know, when there is a huge like ship, and then there's the gummy boats for 3-4 people and the motor. Yes, we got on this boat like 20 people. One of us waits more than 100 kilos. and they put him only with us, so like they will get rid of him, the poor guy. And this guy, like, so we got on the boat, and then we started the boat. And then, but before we got in the boat, there was a fight between smugglers, because some of them came from Iraq, some from Afghanistan. So they had a fight because the island is half-half for them. So a boat goes from the Afghanistan people, a boat goes from the Iraqi people. And then the Afghanistan people took two boats. So the Iraqi people were mad, and then the smugglers were mad, and then they ripped off the boat, and then it was our boat, and we had to get in. They fixed it, and then we had to get in. Oh, anyway.
So you knew the boat was broken?
Yes.
And you had
Yes, they told us it's not the same boat, but in the water we realized it is the same boat. Yeah. So then after we got in the boat, we started. And then the smuggler stays with you like 5 minutes to tell the person how to move the boat and so on. Because if the police also, this was also a problem, who would like drive the boat. Because if the police catches you driving the boat with refugees in, it's more than 20 years in jail. Imagine. Wow. So like, so one from, one from Afghanistan was with us in the boat, and he drove it. And so, but the wind was really bad. And then the boat, every time we wanted to move forward, the wind was like, was moving the boat to the other side and going back to Turkey. Yes. And we were like, no, 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 no. So a friend of my father was with us, and he was like, someone have to go to the water. And then he went to the water for like 5 minutes. And he tried to stabilize the boat, and then he went out. He kind of is the one who managed everything on the boat. He was like, okay, four people has to go in the water. Some people have to take the water out of the boat. So the first person went to the water after him was my sister. And then she was like, yeah, you stay. And then I went from the other side. And then we had a kind of a fight. It's funny, like, even like in such a situation, she was like, no, no, like you take care of yourself. I'm going to go down. So I went from the other side, and two other guys went from the one side.
In the water.
Exactly. So it was my sister.
It's in the middle of the sea.
Yes. Okay. So it was my sister, one guy, me and one guy. And my sister was always afraid, like the whole time she wanted me to get up, because I always, like in really hard situations, I lose my consciousness and I'm like, you know, I just faint. So she was afraid of that. And I wear glasses also. She was afraid of like me fainting and then like leave the boat.
Yes, of course.
So, yeah, but for me, I was like, no, if I am a swimmer, she's a swimmer, she's in the water, why shouldn't I? And then we went, yeah, and we stayed, like a lot of people think we pulled the boat. That's not real. Like if I pulled the boat or we, it's not more than, I don't know, 400 meters. That's it. Because 20 people on the boat, I weigh 55 kilos. And we put one hand around the rope and the other hand we swam. And then our legs also, we moved them. We tried to stabilize the boat so it won't turn. And yeah, also even the waves were pushing the boat from front, like, and then the whole boat was going up. Yeah, and that took us 3.5 hours. And the 3.5 hours, none of us stopped praying out loud. All of us were praying the same time. And yeah, this is something I'll never forget.
What were you praying? Did you have a certain prayer you used, or?
We used more than one prayer, but we were like, God help us, God be with us, God let us arrive, yeah, something like that, and something like from our Quran as well and so on. And the most funny thing on the boat, I was in the water, and a guy from Sudan, I think Sudan, he came and he was like, oh my God, you're so brave. was like, please shut up, let us arrive and then tell me whatever you want.
I can imagine that's not the comment you want to hear in that.
Because he was like sitting on the boat and I was of down, course like, salt in my eyes and of everything course. Like you're like, am I gonna arrive? And then he was so sweet and he was like, you're so brave. It's like, please shut up.
So you were in the water for 3.5 hours trying to stabilizing the boat, and then you reached Greece.
Yes.
Okay. How was that moment when you reached Greece?
I just wanted food and water.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything. We prayed that thank God we are there and so on. I didn't have any clothes. I was exhausted because you have to think about it.
Of course.
I was 4 days before or 5 days before in jungle, in a wood. Like, I didn't have enough water. Like, if we had one bottle of water, so a day I drank not more than one cup. Yes. And what we ate in like 4 days, I ate in 2 days one Snickers, like the chocolate, just to, you know, not make me hungry and so on. So because like the smugglers, they lie to you. They tell you, okay, go down from the bus. We are going, next boat is yours. And you arrive at 5 a.m. in the morning, and then you wait 5 days. And then when you go down to the wood, there is more than 500 refugees are waiting for their boats.
Oh, God.
Yes. Some of them are babies. We were there. So you're sitting there. What should you do? So you get to know people. So we stuck together like 30 people. I don't know how we started talking. Obviously, my sister started talking to someone else. And then, yeah, we got to know them. And then we stayed with them. There was a baby. She was 3 months old. Imagine her. This really broke my heart and my sister's heart. There was a necklace on her neck with all the numbers they can call if the parents died, and she survived. This thing. Like, me and my sister, we couldn't, like, we were like, if you want, we can go on the boat with you so we can take care of her because we're swimmers. Like, we would know what to do. Yeah, but then also they survived. They're fine. They're now in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that really moves me.
Yeah. It's hard, yeah. I mean, now I'm smiling and I'm saying the story because, you know, I got over it. And I think it's just very important that people know how much refugees suffered, actually, to just reach here. And we really do not want anything except of peace.
Yeah.
And just to live a normal life where we can build our futures. Because some people think like we're here because of money. But let me tell you guys something. Me and my sister, we pay 10,000 euros to get to Europe.
Yeah.
So it's not easy. Like, to get the boat, only the boat trip, the trip that might have killed us, you have to pay 1,500 for one person.
Yeah.
So you're even paying your death trip. Yeah.
Yeah, that is. I mean, for me, I just became mother of a little boy. He's 8 months old, and just imagining, you know, being in such a situation. It's just also for your parents. I can so feel. I mean, it's. Okay. So you reached Greece, and what happened next?
So when we reached Greece, we said, hey, the trip is over, like, life is good, and yeah. So then we discovered we had to walk 4 hours after the boat trip. There was a restaurant. We went in, we were like, please, we would like to buy water. Here's a 500 euros. No, I'm not going to give you water. We're like, please, something to drink, anything. No. You're refugees, I'm not going to give you water. So then we didn't get any water. We didn't get any food. We continued. And then a teenager came. I don't know, she lived there. And then we were like, please, just something for... Because we had a kid with us on the boat. He was 6 years old. And we were like, please, his stuff are wet. It's cold. Just something for the boy. Like, I don't know, a huge t-shirt or pullover you don't need. And then she took us in, she gave us water, and yeah, she gave the kid pullover, and she gave me shoes as well because I didn't have any. And then we continued. She told us you have like, yeah, to walk like at least like, if it's a walk, like 4 or 5 hours to reach the city. And yeah, then we did that. And then when we reached the city, there was like hundreds of refugees waiting for UNHCR buses. And and people were waiting 3-4 days. But someone told us, like, if you walk, it's like a half day walk, but you get to the station and it's faster. And yeah, then we did that. Like we slept one day there. We went to a restaurant actually, and the lady was really nice, and she told us there is a church, go sleep in it if you want, it's better than like outside. And then actually my sister, she volunteered in Greece, and she saw her again, she went to visit her afterwards.
Okay.
And wow. She remembered us. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then afterward we slept in this church. Afterwards, we went to the city, and then the UNHCR, like, take more information. If it's a family or if it's, like, a mom, a child, they take you faster. So a guy was like, to my sister, are you the mom of this kid? She's like, yes. And those all are my brothers and cousins. And then we got to the bus faster because of the kid. Yeah, and after that, we get to the bus, and then you go register in Mytilene. We arrived in Mytilene, and then you have to buy a ticket and get a kick out paper, it's called. For every country you cross as a refugee, you have to get a kick out paper so you can continue to the other country. Without this paper, like, you have to just if the police catches you, they bring you back to Turkey. But if you had the paper, then they bring you back. As example, if I am in Budapest, they bring me back to the last country I was with, yeah. Serbia, okay. Which is easier for refugees if they got back. So after that, we got this paper. We got our ticket to Athens. You go with a huge ship. And then after that, we were in Athens. And then it was a bit easier. We were with the bus. We were walking and so on. But also it took us 3 or 4 days to go out of Greece. After that, yeah, we arrived to Serbia. We had to wait 4 days for the paper. After that, it was walking and buses as well. Yeah, after that, we crossed the borders. Serbia, it was the famous train track. A lot of people died there because of the train. Because the people, there is no space next to the train track. And it's the only way. And if the train comes, you could not go anywhere. So a lot of people died, unfortunately, in that way. This train track was really famous with robbery, with doing some terrible stuff for girls and so on. So it was really hard. But we were lucky that we continued with the 30 people. So there was a lot of men with us, protecting us. So we were really blessed with that. After that, we crossed from Serbia to Hungary. And this was the hardest thing. Next to the boat, we crossed from Serbia. After Greece was Macedonia, and then Serbia, and then Hungary. But then after, so Serbia to Hungary is really hard because there's a lot of police. The police in Hungary always hit the refugees or put them in camps and didn't allow them to go out for 3 or 6 months. So we were really afraid. So after we were walking on the train track from Serbia to Hungary, we were discovering how we want to go. And then we met two journalists. And those two journalists were like, you know what? We know other way, and we will show you the way if you allow us to take pictures of you, like real pictures from now. And now there is still real pictures of my trip. Imagine me, my sister, while walking in the cornfield and all of that. We said yes, do whatever you want with our pictures, our profiles, do whatever, just help us. And then it took us like 12 hours. We were in a cornfield. We were like walking two steps and then going down, like the police, the lights and everything was really bad. And then after that, we had to stay also. And then we found vans with the smugglers and so on. You pay 800 euros just to, so this van take you from the borders of Hungary to Hungary.
Okay.
Yes. And after that, we were in Hungary. We stayed one whole week in Hungary. The police was terrible. The people didn't like us. The police hit the people, and they kind of were acting like we were criminals, because like there was the famous Kalati station. It was the train station that closed because of refugees. So they surrounded this station, so refugees can't go out of this, like, because like they do such bad stuff. And then they hit the people because the people were doing like demonstration, that because they said, oh, there is the train will take all the refugees to Germany. So everyone bought tickets, and then they said that nothing happened. They closed the whole train station. So the refugees got mad because they don't have money anymore, you know. And after that we were in Hungary for 1 week. We tried to go as Europeans without passport on the train, and then we got arrested. And but the journalist was with us, so they couldn't do anything bad to us. He was like, I have cameras, I have everything. And after that, they took us to camp, where I told you like it's 3 months or something. So we ran away, and then we heard that Germany sent over 100 buses to take people from Hungary. And then we got on these buses. And after that, those buses took us to Vienna. And then in Vienna, a lot of people welcomed us, which was amazing. Then everyone like started really crying. I didn't cry. I don't know. I think the whole trip, I really didn't cry. And even when I arrived, I didn't cry. I have no idea why, but I think it was too much emotions. Maybe, I don't know, every person reacts differently. And after that, from Vienna, we got the first German city we got in was München. And after that, they took us directly to Berlin to a camp. Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing and taking me through your journey. The moment
from my book, there's more details in it.
Yes. Yeah, I will put the link to the book in the show notes, so everyone who wants to read more about it should definitely read about it. And the moment you are sitting in the bus going from Hungary to Munich or to Vienna, what was this moment you were sitting there in the bus, sort of knowing that now you're kind of safe for now? How did this feel? How was the conversation with your sister? Yeah, how was that moment?
There was no conversation. I don't think any refugee had a conversation. Everyone was sleeping on the bus. Because the days before, either I didn't eat, either I couldn't go to the bathroom, either I slept on the floor. So there was no conversation, no emotions, nothing. You're just exhausted. You just want to have a bed. Like it's a whole month we're talking about till we reached another country. So like we cried, like, or we were happy on the borders of Vienna. Like we had a picture there, and they gave us food. They gave us what stuff that you would need, like in the daily basis. And then in the bus or the train, I was sleeping the whole time. And on the way from Vienna to Germany, the two other journalists who I met in Belgrade, he was the first ever to do an interview with me before I got famous, before anything. I was just refugee and I had time and I did it. He followed me, and he was sitting in the on the train, and he was waiting for me to wake up so he can do an interview with me.
Sweet.
Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was like so unmotivated. I was like, why is this guy following me? Yeah, and then he has like the most important interview everyone asks for it. So yeah, everything happens for a reason, I think.
Yes, that's true. That's so true. And then you came to Berlin, and did you, like, in this month, have you been talking to your parents? Like, were you on the phone with them, or did you message, or how were the contact with your family?
So we would just send them that or call them as soon as possible, because sometimes it's like 4 days or something. You just tell them you're fine. They just ask where you are and all of that. If we have enough money, if they should send us money. As soon as possible. Or if we have internet, we would FaceTime with them. Yeah.
Okay. And then you arrived to Berlin. And then what happened then? You said you were in a camp. And from there, what happened?
So I was in a camp. And basically, you do nothing in the camp. You just learn a little bit German. You go to class if you want to. And so we were just in the camp, you know, having our like 3 meals and so on. And basically you are just doing papers. The paperwork was really hard. A lot of people, like 12,000 people arrived together, imagine. And they had all to register. They had to take numbers. They had to give papers and give their passports, and where did you come from, how old are you, do you have family in Syria, and all of that. And this took us, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. It was really hard. You had sometimes to stay in lines from 12 a.m. till 8 a.m. so you get in, and you don't get in sometimes. And it was a catastrophe, like in Berlin that back then. Like, also the guards sometimes had problems with the refugees. They had fights and so on. So it was really stressful. But the first month, yeah, it was just papers. It was just settling in, just seeing where you are. And after that, after like 3 or 4 months, I wanted to swim. So me and my sister went to a guy who helped us a lot. He was an Egyptian translator. So we went to him and we were like, yeah, we are professional swimmers, blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, wait, are you really a professional swimmer? I was like, yeah, I swear. Why? And he was like, because a lot of swimmers and a lot of athletes told me they're professional and they got drowned in the water. And I was like, no, I was in the world championships in Syria. I went, I qualified, and I was in Arab championships and so on. And then we went to the, he contacted like my first ever club in Berlin. It was called Wasserburg von Spandau. And then they said, okay, we'll do a test. And then they were surprised. They didn't believe we were trained in Syria.
Because you were so good.
Yes.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, because of the technique, because we swim like Germans, you know, or like any other swimmer, like professional swimmer. And then, yeah, the coach was like, did you really train in Syria? I was like, yeah, really, I did train in Syria. Know my country, you know? Yeah, so, yeah.
That's nice. So, which year are we in now? When was that?
Like, the end of, like, it was, I think, October or November.
Last year? 2 years ago.
2015.
Okay, yes. 2015.
We arrived. September 2015.
Okay, so you started to swim then at the Wasserfreunde Spandau.
Yeah.
you started to swim. How was that again for you? Like, maybe, I guess it was like getting a bit back of like normal life. So
actually, it helped me a lot more than other refugees, because, you know, I had something like I knew the people faster. I got to know the people faster, or to have community faster, because I was with them every day. But others also started with school and so on, and I started going to school. I started to learn German, so it was a bit better. But I was still not that open to learn a German, or to, like, I don't know, I'm not in my country. I don't know if I'm happy here. are my parents gonna ever be with me again? Yeah, it was a lot of questions. But yeah, I tried to just swim. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that it just helps you to look forward to something, right?
Yeah.
To just know that
yeah.
you have something regular,
yeah.
you know that
exactly.
you're going to do. And
yes.
yes,
and it's something you already know since like you were small, so I felt safe.
Yes.
Like I'm something I know and it's not different from my country. Yeah.
Yes, yes, I understand. And then what happened next?
So then I didn't have enough money to swim at the club, so we contacted the International Olympic Committee for we wanted to seek help, like because I didn't have enough money and I wanted to train, and my goal was the Olympics. And then we heard about that some refugees are getting scholarship, and then I don't know how, but everything like I was lucky and I got scholarship from the International Olympic Committee. And then after that, the president of the International Committee announced that there will be a refugee Olympic, the first ever refugee Olympic team in Rio 2016. So after that, like, yeah, my coach asked me, he was like, yeah, do you want to be, like, I don't know, if they nominate you, what are you going to do? You want to go? No? Are you open for the idea? And then I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. Like, I went back now to swimming after a long pause and so on. And then they mentioned on the media that there is a... So in this team, there will be a Syrian swimmer who lives in Germany. And they mentioned two other athletes, and then the media got crazy. We got more than 200 emails a day from only media questions and so on. But I wasn't open for the idea. I was like, you know what? I don't want people to feel pity for me. I want to really show people that I really earned this place. And it's not like, you know what? She's a refugee. She had a really hard story. She can go to the Olympics. And I didn't want that. Because it's a nomination, you cannot qualify. It's the first ever refugee Olympic team. So in the beginning, I said no. But then my parents were in Germany. Because
they came to Germany.
Yes, they did the same trip.
Okay.
Yes, wow. Yes. But it was easier for them. They did it in 1 week.
Okay.
Because the police was helping. And the end of the refugee crisis, or like, it's not the end, but I mean the way... Before they closed the borders, yeah, they were the last people to cross, kind of.
Okay.
So the police helped a lot. And, so they talked to me. They told me that we know that maybe it's not the best way, but you also worked so hard, and a lot of people don't know that. And we worked so hard. It's not only you. And my mom was like, I sat every day 2 hours. And, you know, my butt hurts because I sat and I watched you swimming. So, you know what? It's also my work. And my dad also was my coach. So, yeah, then I accepted it. And then I went to the Olympics 2016. It was incredible. And then it was the moment when I believed being a refugee is not something to be ashamed of. I was... I also, you know, I competed under the Olympic flag, which, like, it's kind of a flag of all the countries around the world. Like, it unites us. So I represented a lot of people around the world, and this made me really, really, really proud. And I got a lot of really cute messages, a lot of support, a lot of, like, it was amazing. And I didn't feel anyone felt, like, pity, or, like, when we entered the stadium, everyone was standing because they knew each of those athletes in the team. They had story, and they still, you know, continued, and they still dreamt.
Yeah.
So I was really proud, and now I am really, really proud to be a refugee and representing those people. As now, you know, I am UNHCR now Goodwill Ambassador, and I'm doing a lot for refugees. And my next goal is Tokyo 2020 in 1 year.
Nice. Amazing. Yes, and I will be cheering for you when you're there. And yeah, I mean, I mean, you can be so proud of you more
Thank
than
you so
everyone
much.
Else, I think. I mean, this is, yeah, I think no one looks at you with pity. I think everyone just looks at you in awe. I think everyone listening right now is just like, okay, if I could just be 1% of her, I would rock my
so
life,
much.
You know? I mean, this is just, I mean, I think it's amazing. On the one hand, your story shows what we're capable of, I think, like in situations where you just have to, you don't
exactly.
have the choice anymore. You just
exactly.
have to,
yeah.
you find a way, or at least in the
yes.
the way you can, you will find a way.
Yeah,
and,
because
yeah.
I know that, because a lot of people, like, as example, I don't think, like, a lot of people tell me, oh my God, I would never do that, or. And I was like, if you are there, believe me, you would do that. Like, I never imagined that I will be as grown up as I am now, or as opened as I am now. When I was also in my country, I didn't know anything about refugees. Anything. I didn't know that I should help people even. I was like just too busy focusing on my life, on my goals and all of that. And I didn't even think anyone needs help. So now I am like, I had this very, very strong story, and it's inspiring people. And some people are like looking at my Instagram feed and they're like, oh my God, you're inspiring me every day. And I don't know that. So imagine, I think we all inspire someone in our lives, a friend, a husband, a boyfriend, and all of that. And I think each person has something special. Like, you know, I am good at swimming, I am good at talking, but I'm never good at math. But I think, you know, each and every person have a place in this world. And people just should really believe that they're really important. It's not like because now I am famous and I have blah, 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 blah. No, I was believing since I was really young that I wanted to go to the Olympics. I didn't know how. I didn't know if I'm gonna qualify. But I was like, I am going to go. And
That's
it really
amazing.
Happened. Yeah.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about the work everyone could actually
yeah.
do to help refugees. I mean, you are an ambassador for refugees. You're helping a lot. And you already said as well, when you were back in Syria, you didn't even know that someone might
exactly.
need your help. And we are so... especially in Europe, we are so concerned with our own lives and we are so busy and everyone is so important. And so I think I really want to use this conversation as well to wake up a little bit and to shake reality of the people a little bit, to just realize, well, there are people needing our help. And how can we help? What would you say is what would you have needed on your trip? And yeah, just let us know what we can do.
You know, the first thing, what should happen right now is opening the borders.
Yes.
And I think this is something I think the government is not doing, but I think the people can change that if they
yes.
talk more about that. If the people want that, I think the governments will listen, because I'm sorry, but like Syria have 27 million people in it. It's nothing compared to Germany alone. And Germany opened up the door and welcomed refugees, but a lot of other really rich countries, a lot of countries with the countries that really can actually welcome refugees, they did not. And this is, you know, like, okay, there is refugees here in Germany, but did it change Germany? No, it did not. Yeah, did it affect Germany in a really bad way? No, it did not. And
in a positive way, I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because like people got integrated. I know a lot of Germans who, I know two of my teachers wanted to help me only, to learn the language so they can learn a little bit of Arabic also. You know, it's just an exchange thing. And it's a win-win for everyone. And it's never bad. It's never bad to have a new culture. It's never bad to learn something new. I think always the Germans are always afraid of something new. I realized that. And I think, no, something new really can be really good for you. And, you know, you're afraid of going out and saying hello to your neighbor where he is a refugee or something. Well, we changed our whole country. I had to build my whole life again. I had to meet people all over again. I threw my whole life behind of me because I didn't choose that, but I had to. So, like, just choose to do that. And I don't regret any of that. I have a beautiful life now, and I know a lot of really amazing people. And I didn't have to change all of my life. My friends and everything in Syria, it's still in Syria, and they're all in my heart. But I have now a new life. I have a new goal, and it's never bad, you know, to know new people. And I am also, I have, my best friend is German, and you know, everyone around me is German. Should I just close my eyes and walk around? No, I did not do that. So yeah, this is what I'm saying. They just should really give refugees a chance. I'm not saying we are all angels and, you know, you like us all. No, I'm not saying that, but just give us a chance, you know, to live with you, to get to know you, to learn the new stuff and to do it right, because also we came from a very different country, and sometimes the things that are here, they are new to us. Like, as example, like my tax lawyer, he tells me, send me this, and I'm like, wait, what? I don't know anything of that.
But this is the same for us.
Very good.
Nothing.
I'm not the only one.
No one understands the German tech system. Not even when you're German.
Very good. I'm happy about that.
Yes, so I absolutely agree. I think right now is a great chance in the moment of time we are at to open the hearts, open the borders, and learn from history, like, once and for all, and to really make a difference. And I think, like, our generation really can make a difference here, because maybe it's difficult for the people who are way, way older and maybe have a different story and maybe also still other fears. But I think that it's time to change in the way we think, and that this was also something I never understood, and I never had this concept of borders. For me, it's always just, I mean, it's one world. We are all inhabitants of one world. It's our world, and it's just a human thing that someone draws some lines. But so what? I mean, you and me.
I don't think it's even a human thing. It's a government thing.
Yeah, it's true.
Because I don't think any other person have a problem with the other country.
Yeah,
it's something that history left for us, and it's something that ancient minds left for us. And there's still people who are believing in that, and that's completely wrong. Because, you know, if you look at it, every country was in the other country. Like, as example, if you look at Tunisia or at Morocco, they speak French. Why? Because, like, France,
they were colonized.
Exactly. So I know there was war and so on, but in the end, like, you know, now they speak French, which is, I think, amazing for them. As example, a million of, I don't know, when there was war in Greece, Syria opened the door for them. Now in Germany, Syrian people are coming from Syria to Germany, as example, to be refugees. Yeah. So I think we should stop that. And people should know that there are people on the borders living in tents. They don't have the medical help. They don't have enough food. They don't even, you know, you should also think about this really, really, really tiny detail. He cannot even eat what he wants. Imagine not wearing what he wants. I'm talking about eating or the medical important things. So I just want people to think about that, and to think about that if it was them or their families. Because, you know what, when I was in Syria, I never thought about that. And I was like, yeah, I have my amazing life. My parents are doing everything for me. I am doing school, swimming, that's it. But I think our role is way bigger in the world than that. And now I really believe it. And I feel really, really sorry for, you know, that I can't, you know, when I go with UNHCR, I see the people, I talk to them, and I wish I could take them home with me, but I can't. And because of borders, because of passports, because of all of that that we created, you know, so I don't think any person should live in a tent in the cold or when it's snowing. And just open UNHCR. On the UNHCR, you can see all the photos. Sometimes it's too sad, but this is reality, to be honest.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I absolutely agree that it's time to wake up and to change and not to just be. I think sometimes you get numb to it, you know? It's just, it gets so normal that you're just like, yeah, this is the world. This is, but I don't agree. I think it's.
Yeah. It's the same. It's the same like in Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone is like, yeah, it's since ancient history. So it's ancient history. So why should I do anything?
Yeah.
And it's, I just want to say that we are lucky because we are here. We are lucky that we have everything we need and way more than we need, to be honest. And we just have to appreciate everything we have and, you know, think about other people because they really, not having enough food or not having enough water is the worst any human can have. Or even having war also is really terrible thing to have. So before this happened in any other country, we shouldn't realize that after it happens. We should realize it now and help now because I realize it way too late. And but after a lot of, I lost my country, I lost a lot of things, but now I realize it and I want to do more and I hope I can help. But as I said, you know, I am one human and I cannot go and take those people with me home or take them to my country, but at least I share my story with them and I tell them, look, I am a refugee and look where I am today. And you can also do that.
Yeah, that's great. I also, I love this quote, or this is a quote I live by. It's the best way not to lose hope is by taking action. And I think this is just the way we should behave is instead of complaining or we just have to take action and to really do something. So whoever is listening, reach out for the next refugee camp or look up how you can help refugees maybe in the area of where you live and support however you can support. I mean, this is also, I think sometimes it just helps if you go to a refugee camp and you just be with the people.
Just
people. Thank you so much. I have one last question I ask every of my interview guests. And the question is, imagine it will be the last day of your life. So you live the next 100 years, you have a beautiful life, you're really happy. You won in Tokyo the Olympics. You had an amazing life. But it's the last day of your life and there has been a technical problem and everything has been deleted. So the book is deleted. There's nothing of you, no movies, no pictures, nothing left of you. And I would come to you and I would have a blank white sheet of paper and a pen. And I would tell you, Isra, I'm so sorry. Everything has been deleted. But here on this white sheet of paper and with this pen, you can write down three things of your wisdoms you would want everyone to remember, what people should live by. What would you write down on this paper?
I would write hope, humanity, and belief.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So for everyone who would like to be in contact with you or get to know more about you, how can they reach out or what's the best way to get in contact maybe or
I think they can contact me on my DMs on Instagram. That's the easier way, I think.
Yes.
I don't answer a lot, but I'll try this time. Other way, there is also my management's email also on my Instagram's page, on my bio. But they can all send me DMs. I'll try to read them. Read the book. Yeah, I also have the link also on my bio from my book. Yeah, it actually came out in English and then German.
Amazing.
It was the second language, yeah, and it's called Schmetterling.
Schmetterling, yes, beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Isra, I just want to acknowledge you. I had many interviews in my life. I talked to so many people, but this interview was by far the one that moved me personally the most.
Thank you so much. Thank you for talking to me. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for being so inspiring, so strong, so such a beautiful soul. And I wish you from the bottom of my heart that all your dreams come true. And I will be cheering when I will see you in the Olympics.
Thanks
and
so
I wish
much.
You all the best. And thank you so much.
Take care of your baby.
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
Bye.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dich dieses Interview inspiriert hat, dass es dir gefallen hat, dass du genauso wie ich wahrscheinlich gerade sehr tief berührt bist und dass ganz viel wahrscheinlich auch in dir bewegen wird, was vielleicht auch ja, die Art und Weise betrifft, wie wir manchmal über fremde Menschen denken, in Anführungsstrichen fremde Menschen, und wie unglaublich wichtig es ist, einfach das Herz offen zu lassen und keine Angst zu haben, sondern im Gegenteil Menschen zu helfen, die unsere Hilfe brauchen, genauso wie wir selbst manchmal Hilfe brauchen. Und ich hoffe sehr, dass wir mit diesem Interview dazu beitragen konnten, dass sich was verändert und dass wir noch offener werden und einfach, ja, den Menschen, die Hilfe brauchen, Hilfe geben, denn dafür sind wir da, denn wir sind alle miteinander verbunden. Und ich glaube, das ist das, was uns letztlich zu Menschen macht, dass wir unsere Herzen öffnen und dass wir einander unterstützen. Und ich würde mich unglaublich freuen, wenn du bei Instagram bei mir vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, mir deine Gedanken zu dieser Podcast-Folge dalässt, Yusra Nachrichten schickst, dass sie einfach ein wundervoller Mensch ist und sie unglaublich stolz auf sich sein kann. Und ja, ich wünsche dir jetzt einfach einen wunderschönen Tag. Ich finde, dieses Interview hat auch nochmal ein bisschen gerade gerückt, wie gut wir es haben. Und ich glaube, das ist manchmal auch einfach sehr, sehr wichtig, das anzuerkennen und voller Dankbarkeit dafür zu sein und dieses Privileg auch wirklich zu nutzen, etwas aus dem eigenen Leben zu machen. Und ja, fühl dich von Herzen umarmt. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Du bist ein Geschenk für diese Welt. Und wie Yusra gesagt hat, jeder Mensch ist besonders, jeder Mensch hat etwas und auch du. In diesem Sinne, fühl dich von Herzen umarmt. Rock on und Namaste. Deine Laura.